Welcome to Extraordinary People.
We're here to celebrate everyday people who are on a mission to change the world however they can. From working with survivors of domestic violence to building awareness of mental health issues, our guests each have their own unique approach to addressing challenges close to their hearts, making life better. Today, I'm talking to Carly Trish Grove. Carly is the co-founder of OPOP, One Plate, One Price. Carly, hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for giving me a platform. Always a pleasure to talk about my favourite subject.
For our listeners, could you explain the whole concept behind One Plate, One Price?
Yes. So essentially, we're a restaurant. And from the customer perspective, we're a fairly normal restaurant. We have a limited menu. And there's a number of reasons for that. But the name, the OPOP and One Plate, One Price, is about the core part of the menu, which is our main dishes, which are only two each day, generally a meat dish and a vegan dish. And then we have other dishes, side dishes. But the core menu is focused around these dishes. And the idea is that we are here to feed people, not just food, but to kind of nourish their whole being, because restaurants have this amazing opportunity to be places where people can hang out and be and meet people. We have so many social issues at the moment, loneliness being one. So, you know, the idea that we can provide this meal, it can nourish you in many ways, but essentially it's a balanced meal and it's an affordable price. And of course, affordability is subjective, but we have our main meals priced at $9.50, which is the current hourly rate for living wage, which is what we've said we'll set every main meal based on. And it's to try and encourage and enable more people to eat out and be with people and eat well, and try and use restaurants and food to be a catalyst, I guess, for some desperately needed social change.
Brilliant. And you're a social enterprise. So just for the benefit of everyone listening who might not know what that is, could you briefly explain what that means?
I mean, I think, yeah, it always is a bit fluffy, because really, essentially, a social enterprise is an organisation that has a purpose beyond that of making profit. But essentially, we're also a for-profit enterprise. What we do with our profits is more about the social enterprise. So we our purpose, or how we've defined our purpose, is to use restaurants at the moment, just one site, but hopefully one day soon, many more, to use restaurants to bring good work and good food to communities. So, yeah, we have to make a profit. Otherwise, we have to, you know, at least pay our bills. But our profits will go into doing that job rather than being used to benefit lots of people at the top, which is obviously, you know, the current model for restaurants often. And I don't think it's working.
As you've explained, OPOP is more about, you talked about loneliness. So you've got the purpose of addressing health, eating well, affordable prices, getting the community together. What drove you to develop this kind of model?
It was a park cafe, but, you know, we had 20 people working there full time. So it was a busy building. And it turned out to be a real hub for the community. And we could see the huge benefit that this would bring to lots of people's lives in lots of different ways. And I think we just looked at that and thought, restaurants, and particularly at the moment, you know, we're in a pandemic. We've come out of this lockdown period, and we can see how important restaurants are to, you know, the kind of life of a thriving society. And we need social change drastically. We have huge equality issues, educationally, financially. And, you know, perhaps restaurants in their very, very everyday role can play a part in doing something different, because we need more good work and more good food. So hospitality employs over 8% of our working population. So to me, it feels like a kind of a no-brainer that restaurants need to play a big part. And, you know, we can't just wait for government to do things. Business have to take responsibility to make change.
It's so great to hear you talk about being heart of the community. It sounds like there's a really strong community spirit in Ashburton already, and OPOP is becoming the heart of that. I know that you've got plans to expand. How do you replicate the being the heart of the community without actually having to relocate your family each time you open a new outlet?
Well, that would be fun, wouldn't it? I'm not sure I'd be very popular. I mean, first of all, you know, whether we're not the heart of the Ashburton community, because there's lots of other great places, but it's about creating spaces where people feel that they can just be. So, for example, We sell loose leaf tea in a teapot for, I don't know, £2.90. But we also sell a builder's cup with a tea bag in it for a quid. And it's about creating spaces where more people can feel welcome and they can feel that they can be more often and creating that familiarity. But I think the important thing comes from the team that are there. So it's empowering the people that run the restaurant to feel that they can take ownership and make decisions and have autonomy, because I think it's those things that create that community hub. If you walk in somewhere and you feel like the people that work there actually want to be there and actually feel a sense of belonging themselves, well, that's contagious.
So it would be kind of a social replication model where people that feel as passionately as you might open another restaurant somewhere else rather than you relocating the whole family. What would that look like? And what do you think the biggest challenges of that are going to be?
Well, I think there's loads of ways that this could go. And social replication is just one way. And I guess replication is just a kind of a social entrepreneur's way of saying franchise. There's loads of ways this could go. Basically, what we're doing with our first site is, you know, we're experimenting. We're trying to kind of see if you can run a restaurant in where, you know, everyone's treated well and the customers are respected and the people are respected. So we have to see if this model works, because you know, we're pushing at all the boundaries here. So far, so good. But, you know, we're only in week 8. So what we're trying to do is create a blueprint for better. Don't want to sound too much like the government, but a blueprint for better. We say that this is a model that works. We can prove it works. We then could go out and open lots of sites ourselves, or we could collaborate with partners that want to open their own sites. Essentially, this is going to be a cooperative model with all employees owning all of the assets. We're a community interest company, so it was all locked in within the business anyway. We also, excuse me, we want to support the restaurant group with an academy, because a lot of this is about learning and giving people a set of transferable skills and creating an industry that is respected like it is in other parts of the world, whereas in this part of the world, hospitality is often seen as a low-skilled area. So it might be that we create a blueprint and people can, you know, adapt it and borrow it, and, you know, a kind of open source way of learning and just being the catalyst for that change in the industry. So there's lots of ways, and time will tell which is the way that's going to work best for people. But there's lots of restaurants that are independent that start with the most wonderful ideas and enthusiasm, and they're not backed up by the acumen, the business acumen or experience. So, you know, it might be that we just end up being that back office support in terms of IT infrastructure and human skills and all the learning that individual entrepreneurs don't get around to doing. We might, you know, help restaurants that way. We don't know. At the moment, we're just taking it day by day. It's an experiment.
I know you're really focused on the green agenda too, championing suppliers who are really disrupting how business is done. And I know you've worked with Bellu to provide the free still and sparkling water in your restaurant. How did that relationship come about?
Bellu have been going for a long time. And when we were looking for bottled water years ago, you know, I guess with every supplier, we always looked at how could we work with the most ethical supplier. Well, you can't get much more ethical than a company that gives 100% of their profits to a charity. And what better charity for a water company to give it to than WaterAid? So that ticked a lot of our boxes. So you know, they were a social enterprise. So it started us learning about the world of social entrepreneurship. And then now we have this wonderful relationship where this win-win, where we can offer our customers unlimited still and sparkling water. We ask for a donation. We suggest £1. I don't think we've had anyone say no as yet. It feels like a treat to have chilled and filtered sparkling water for £1. The real bonus for us was that the ex-CEO of Bellu, Karen Lynch, who we met when we first started our relationship, has now gifted us the role of her time as chair of our board.
That's amazing. I love how, as social entrepreneurs, everyone helps each other and is really supportive. It's a great community separately, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. There's just complete authenticity about the idea that actually the people that are in this space really, mm-hmm. really do have purpose at the core of what they're doing.
And you also work with Easy Jose Coffee. It must be great to have suppliers where you can actually see the impact you're having on communities as far afield as Peru.
Well, I get a little bit frustrated because there's quite a lot of what people term greenwashing, which is, I don't know if that's a widely used expression, but where companies use words like fresh or local, or and they can be fairly empty. And in the coffee world, you know, there's lots of photos. If you think of even big brands without wanting to name any, but a lot of the photos that these big brands will use in their marketing will be pictures of growers and you know, small children on their mother's backs, and it all feels very authentic and like, you know, drinking their coffee is really helping people in other parts of the world. But the reality is that most coffee companies buy from a broker and they don't really have a direct relationship and they don't really know what's going on. And often what's going on is not very positive. So Easy Jose have taken it to the complete extreme, and they work directly with the Peruvian community in the rainforest. This community sell all of their coffee to Easy Jose. So it's a complete relationship. So the thing about Easy Jose is that they work directly with the Peruvian community. So they visit them, they guarantee to buy their entire crop. You know, of course, that's huge security for that community. And they also guarantee them an income, which means that they are one of the, if not the highest paid coffee growing community in Peru. And, you know, so instead of working with a middleman and not really knowing what's going on, they make sure that they really know what's going on and they make sure this community has the benefit, because we're having the benefit drinking their beautiful coffee. And, you know, it's so important that, you know, that everyone's winning out of this, not just us.
Absolutely. As you've explained, OPOP is about more than food. It's a social enterprise with the purpose of addressing health, wealth, work inequalities, green agenda. What drove you both to develop this kind of model?
Oh gosh, need, you know, need for different, personal need for different, and you know, societal need for change. I guess, you know, we had the privilege of starting a restaurant 14 years ago, seeing it nearly fail multiple times because, you know, we were naive and we still are naive, don't get me wrong. And then of watching this community grow and us being the part of it, and not just a part of it, but a real central hub. And so it just felt, you know, at a time in our life, you know, we just kind of had a window. We sold that business and then thought about what could we do next. And when we thought of lots of different things that we might do with our lives, we realized that hospitality was the thing that we knew the best and we could make the most change in our immediate society and our family and on our own personal lives.
As a social business, obviously you need to generate enough income to keep going and keep doing your great work. How can people support your restaurant today?
Oh, well, that's very easy. Come and eat at it. I mean, you know, absolutely. It's, but, you know, come and eat at it, because essentially that doesn't matter how much good work we're doing. We're only as good as our last service. We're only as good as our last meal. So, you know, we have to be a brilliant restaurant and a great coffee house and a great bar before we can do all the social good that we want to do. So, yes, that's what we need. But luckily, people are coming and they're enjoying it and we're getting great feedback. And we're quietly confident that people are going to continue to come and continue to tell their friends. It doesn't happen overnight. But yes, look us up, check us out. And, you know, if you're coming to Dublin on holiday or the moor or the beaches, you know, we're kind of central to all of it.
We'll definitely put your link with the podcast so people can find you. Also, you rent space out, don't you?
We have this fabulous restaurant that we're not using every evening. So we are looking at lots of ways we can work with community for cinema nights and talks and pop-ups and book launches. Yeah, we have a very Shoreditch-esque space right in the middle of Dartmoor.
Do you think COVID has changed the ways communities come together?
Well, I just think, unfortunately, we've become too comfortable on our sofas. And, you know, social interaction is awkward and it doesn't always go right. And I think, you know, there's a danger of us becoming too used to not trying. So I think it will change it. But I think we have to relearn some skills and, you know, put pressure on ourselves, not necessarily to spend money in restaurants, but just to be in our communities, because I think it's, you know, it is next to somewhere to live and something to eat. It is the most basic human need is, you know, connection with our community.
So we've talked about the social replication model or how you might grow after you've proved your concept. Do you have any idea of the timings that you might be looking at or any idea where you might go next?
Well, timings is always yesterday. You know, if you speak to anyone that's got entrepreneurial spirit, I guess it's always, you know, now. So, you know, we would love to be looking at sites this year. In terms of where, you know, Ashburton is a fairly privileged community. It's not necessarily the best place for a restaurant that is trying to bring more good work, more good food to community that is already, you know, fairly robust in terms of its social structure. So I guess looking at areas where there's higher levels of unemployment, higher levels of inequality or work-based inequality is where we want to be. So, and probably bigger towns as well, where there's much more diversity and diversity of needs. So we're in the Southwest. So those towns we think that we believe to be the right towns, who knows, are going to be places like Brixham, Torquay, Paignton, Plymouth, you know, all got so much going for them and all possibly could do with, you know, an injection of new ideas as well.
What advice would you give to a person or business who wanted to be able to give something back to the world like you're doing?
Well, I don't know if I'm doing it yet. I just have the intention to do it. Let's just make that clear. Well, it's so difficult to give advice because, you know, I'm unproven as yet. I'm a big believer in taking risks and leaps, and we're only here once, and not thinking too long about things, and sometimes just going for it and doing it. But that does need to be balanced out, which luckily in my case it is, by somebody who is more cautious. But, you know, I do know that my harebrained schemes, you know, often the ones that we go for in the end. And some of those have been positive and not all of them. But I guess it's just keep getting up and trying again. And yes, that idea that, you know, I just want to have regrets when I look back. And I think I'm much more likely to regret what I don't do than what I do do.
Brilliant. And finally, Carly, what's next for you? I know we've talked about the social franchising and all that kind of thing, but have you got any other things that you want to achieve or do?
Well, so, I mean, this is obviously the big project at the moment. For me, it's about getting more and more people understanding what we're trying to do so that, because, you know, we can't do this on our own. This is a big plan. You know, this is potentially a new model for casual dining that we can roll out across the UK. That's not something I want to do on my own. This isn't about ego. This isn't about me. This is about an idea that we've had that could be that catalyst. So this is now a moment for me to talk to as many people as I can and to answer as many of their questions and to be challenged and to show them the model that we've built and to show them that it can be done and that it may be awkward and clunky and uncomfortable because it's not what we're used to. But sometimes change is needed and sometimes change can happen. And I think we're proving it. So we just need to get in front of as many people as we can right now.
Brilliant. So like I said, we'll put your details, the web address,
great,
on the podcast. If somebody wanted to reach out to you, should they just email you via the...
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for your time, Carly. It's been great chatting with you. I'm sure all our listeners have learned an awful lot from your story. And for everybody out there, please tune in to our next podcast, Extraordinary People.